Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. Welcome, and once again we have a whiskey to review. Reviewing Weller Weeded Bourbon Antique 107. Comes in at 53.5% or 107 proof. Yeah. Damn!
Strong.
Hence the Antique 107, I guess.
Yes.
I like it. It's not great, but it's... So, I gave it an 87. I think it's got a lot of kick. I think I'll give it the good kind of burn, but, you know, nothing amazing about it, but it's a $24 bottle, and
so I give it a 90.
Okay.
It comes through at 107 ABV.
By the way, I didn't know that when I wrote 87.
Right. So it's really strong, and you can taste it. I'm sorry. I mean, like, there's a lot of heat that is delivered shortly after it hits the palate. Like, it comes, like, at first it's kind of thin, and you're like, eh. And then all of a sudden, it just, like, it hits you right in the mouth with that classic kind of bourbon flavor. It's a weeded bourbon, which is a little bit different. And part of that comes from, you know, the fact that it's you know, well, we won't get into it.
But all right.
Yeah, there's some stuff there about, you know, where it's distilled and who distills and everything else. But what really comes out, though, is once you get past the strength of it, you know, there are some really good, like, you know, solid oak flavor, and then your vanilla and your spices and those things sort of come out after the fact. But my biggest issue is just that the alcohol is just so strong initially up front.
Yes, it overpowers
that everything. It overpowers things, and it takes time for it to kind of, and you can't, you know, it's hard to kind of to manage that. And sip it. Like, every time you sip it, it really flares up your nostrils.
Yeah,
you know,
it does.
Like, you feel it in your nose. But
I still think it's a good burn because it's not like it's turning me off.
Right. It is very good. Now, listen, this is a very coveted bottle because there are states who can't get this. And when they do, I mean, it sells out like that.
Okay.
You know, the fact that you were able to find it and grab it, you were fortunate. Now, I have, you know, two Antique 107s at home, and I have two... the Green Label Special Reserves at home. I'm currently on the hunt for the Weller 12 to kind of complete that trio.
All right.
You know, very, very good. And I'm a fan, but this is, of those three that I just mentioned, the Special Reserve, the Weller 12, and this Antique 107, this is my least favorite. Which doesn't mean that it's bad.
Right, I mean, you gave it a 90.
Right, and I like my bourbon and my alcohol with a strong kick. You know, I want to get as much bang for my buck as possible, but just the flavor balance on this, to me, isn't outstanding.
Okay, well, I bought it because I was talking to a friend of yours, mm-hmm. while he had really big pieces of metal on my back, about whiskey and you know, just
talk about how I'll explain what's going on here.
All right.
I'm trouble spitting it out. So you went to my buddy Jay. Jay is he's a massotherapist, and then he's certified in body tempering. It's a recovery. Those are a couple recovery methods that I use during the kind of process of my working out and powerlifting and everything else to help my body kind of recover and to try to prevent and get out ahead of injuries and to help deal with some injuries I've had in the past. Body tempering, they basically take a 150 to a 200 pound piece of rolled steel and, you know, apply it in different places to apply pressure, which helps, you know, blood flow, and it helps kind of break up some sticky fascia and various things that happen with your body biomechanically. And it's a really effective method, especially like for bigger guys and people that are, you know, just, you know, super tight. And then I know he also did some massage work with you
as well.
He's, you know, a certified massage therapist. And Jay is also a big guy.
He is a big man.
I mean, he goes about 6'3", about 260.
And he's jacked.
Right. Like, I mean, he did strongman competitions for a long time. And he still kind of works in that mode. He's done powerlifting as well. But he, you know, he's a guy that when lifters go to him with aches and pains, he knows exactly what they're talking about, which is really one of the things that, that drew me to him. And I've known him, and before that we had, you know, like similar friends and things like that. So, you know, we were running in the same circles, but with the whiskey, actually, like, he was kind of starting to dabble, and he came over to the house one night, when we had, you know, after a workout, and I kind of opened him up to my collection and really sucked him in. And ever since, he's been on a tear himself. So,
well, he recommended this, and I went out and bought a bottle again. I like it. And we're talking about like stuff you'll drink every day. We're talking about how, you know, he asked me what I like best. I mentioned Lagavulin and Booker's and stuff. And I was like, but I won't drink that on a Tuesday night for no reason. This was his recommendation for a non-special occasion whiskey, and definitely a solid recommendation. By the way, the work he did on my shoulder made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. I was actually able to bench press today. I was still in some pain, but 2 weeks ago, I could not push. I mean, pushing 25-pound plates on a machine hurt so bad I could barely do it. Today, I was actually able to work out evenly with both arms yesterday, and I felt a little bit of pain on my shoulder still, but right. It was not, it's one of those things where it didn't feel like an injury anymore. It just felt like pain. And that's a big jump.
You know, I mean, a lot of what, you know, as a person who works out consistently, a lot of what it is kind of managing some of those injuries and those bumps and bruises that you get along the way. And also understanding, like, even for people who don't, like, I competitively lift, you don't, right. But you do lift on a regular basis. And for no matter what you're doing, there are certain things that you should be doing to take care of your body, to make sure that you have the proper movement patterns and your shoulders and your scapula are attracting and retracting appropriately. And, you know, that you've got proper hip alignment and you start to deal with certain imbalances that you have. And some of it feels like physical therapy type stuff, which it is. But if you do that stuff before you get injured, you know, you take 15 minutes before your actual workout to work on some of the imbalances that you have and to work on proper mobility and stretching and all that sort of stuff, then you may not get some of the injuries that you see, whether it's bench pressing and you get issues in the shoulder, or, you know, you're squatting or doing whatever you're doing for your legs and you get, you know, knee pain and all those sort of things. There's to a certain degree, some of it's preventable and you can lessen the overall impact if you do the necessary things that kind of help you deal with those, the prehab, if you will.
Well, I enjoyed meeting him. He's a good guy.
You need to go back.
And oh, I will. I will. And I, he also wants to drink whiskey with us. He actually subscribed to our show while I had a giant chunk of metal on my back. Anyway.
Well, he just sits there and kind of watches writhe in pain. So I was like, yeah, this sounds like a good idea.
I literally said, like, should I be talking? You said, do what you want to do. I'm just going to put this gigantic chunk of metal on you. So, a couple things. We talked about the farm bill last week, and it actually passed the House and Senate. Mm-hmm. So, assuming Trump signed it into law, which I think could have happened today. I frankly don't know if it did because of all the other stuff going on. But assuming it will be signed into law. And by the way, the vote was overwhelming in favor. It was like, you know, I think the Senate was like 91-9.
Well, Mitch McConnell brought it to the floor. I mean, and the big thing in it is the, you know, decriminalization of hemp and
right.
the ability to produce and manufacture hemp. And we've, as a society, we've known for over a century the benefits of hemp.
Right.
And there were multiple reasons why it was outlawed, whether it was the paper industry, timber industry, and a myriad right. of other reasons as to, you know, that were political and that had nothing to do with actual, you know, industrial right. and positive impact. So there, we've known for a long time it was relatively a no-brainer. Why it took this long?
A no-brainer. It took 100 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I mean, why it took this long? I don't know. But Mitch McConnell clearly sees this.
Bless you.
Sorry.
Bless you again.
Oh man, we can try to edit that out, but I don't know if it'll work.
Nope.
Okay, well, we need like a sneeze button, like that.
We do need a cough button, right?
But you know, Mitch McConnell, I think he clearly sees this as something that can help his state. His state
absolutely
has been devastated by, you know,
the farming impact, mostly from tobacco. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to jump in and save your man.
Thank you.
And yeah, his state is one of the poorer states in the country, and their agriculture has been devastated by reduction in tobacco production, and this is a fix. And right. I mean, you've used CBD, I use CBD.
Which is just one is a small percentage one of, them, yeah. Of one the of uses them. For hemp.
Right. There's industrial uses, paper.
Right. And now that we've taken the criminality away from it, we can actually figure out, okay, what can we use this for besides just, you know, people smoking it to get a better night's sleep. Now there can be more research done to figure out exactly how useful of a material it is. And it really does open the door for a place like Kentucky and other places to get back in the game agriculturally and have a positive impact on their economics
and their economies. So I started using the Herbstrong recovery drops, which mm-hmm. contain CBD. And when I ordered it, they basically told me that, you know, your shipment's going to be delayed by about a week because there's so much demand and their supply is limited. And they obviously, but they hold themselves to a higher standard in terms of what they're producing. And you actually looked into them as a company, so you'll back me up on that. But so anyway, the fact that there's a shortage of something and it was legal in some states and not legal in others and federally banned, and the fact that it's changed... You know, I rarely say good things about Mitch McConnell, but in this case, well done, Mitch. About right. fucking time.
You know, I mean, and then following that directly, you have, it looks like we may actually get a vote on the criminal justice reform bill that was presented probably about a month ago.
Right.
Now, I've been tracking it, and there have been some changes that have been made. It's not final. So we won't go through everything right now, but when the final bill comes to the floor for a vote, I'm assuming that it will pass, and we will have to look at what they're voting on and what actually is being, what's being passed versus what was, you know, initially presented. And you hope that not a lot is changed.
Right.
My fear, though, is some of the grumblings that you're hearing out of the GOP camp is... for lack of a better word, they just aren't comfortable with all this talk about, you know, reducing recidivism, right? Like, I mean, and that's not exactly what they're saying, but what they're attacking are the measures that would directly impact and reduce the recidivism and, you know, keeping people out of jail. And I think a lot of this, a lot of people will say it's based on race, and I think some of it can be based on time. But, you know, a lot of these people in the Senate and even in Congress as well are of the mindset that you throw them in jail for as long as you can, keep them off the streets, and then as soon as they do something else, you throw them back in right. for, you know, probation violations, parole violations, whatever. You know, you stack that on top of them and you just keep them in the system, and that's how you reduce crime.
Which I think has been proven not to right. work.
We all know it doesn't work, but they felt that, well, we've seen crime, you know, like, crime rates from, you know, the 70s and 80s and 90s, you know, like, we've seen this dip in crime, right. and especially violent crime, so they feel that their way is working. And we know that it's not, that's not what's working, right?
Right.
There are other factors, and so that seems to be where it's being attacked. So the question is, what's actually going to be brought to the floor that they're going to vote on and pass, and that Trump actually signs, that's really where you have to look and do the comparison.
Right. But hey, it's going to get to the floor, or it might get to the floor, and that was a,
which is good, yeah. unless they strip everything of it right, of value, right. and then you've got some.
The big thing to me is getting rid of mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent drug crimes. That is something that's way too many people are in jail for way too long. And I know I've said that a million times, so I won't say it again, but that's what's got to change. Did you see the Pelosi, Schumer, Pence, Trump discussion?
Yes.
I did not.
The most awkward thing about it was Pence.
My boy Mike Pence. All right. Let's go.
Looking, like, he didn't say a word. He looked like he didn't, like, he wanted to be anywhere else but where he was. He... he tried to look like he was very engaged, but you could just tell that he wasn't. That was one of the more awkward things about it. And a lot of it, the crux of it comes down to Trump is saying you got to build a wall. And Pelosi and Schumer are saying, listen, we don't want to shut down of the government over this. There's already certain money allocated for immigration and border security. So let's go with that and let's keep the government running. And right. Trump saying, no, I'll shut it down if I have to for our country, for border security, for, you know, to solve this evil problem of immigration.
Right.
You know, I'm going to make a stand for the country. And, you know, Trump played that up. And Schumer and Pelosi, they did a decent job of kind of standing their ground. But I think that and Schumer did it to a degree, but they just aren't, to me, in my opinion, they're not articulating well enough what's already been done. You know, the money that was allocated under Obama to, you know, fix the physical barriers that we already have along the border. Like, that stuff is happening now. But that money wasn't allocated by Trump. That stuff that Obama had allocated over 2 years ago, nearly 3 years ago. You know, and then you have the things that, you know, like Trump and his administration have said, you know, let's go forward, let's put some more money into border security by adding agents and all those sort of things. Like, those things are happening now, and it takes time for those things to take effect. But the other thing that they also have to do is they have to move Trump off the idea of a wall, because he's saying we're going to build a wall. Right. And he's keeping it very simple and very basic, as if he's going to that you're going to actually be able to construct a 20-foot wall with barbed wire along, you know,
3,000 miles.
Yeah, 3,000 miles of border, which is not true or accurate. There are some places where you just can't build a wall. Right. And those places don't actually need a border, because
like the Rio Grande River, for
right, example. Like, just not going to work. But there are other things that there are some places where you can build an actual barrier, and they probably should. Right, we already have a barrier at some portions.
Right,
right. Like, so, what they have to do is bring it all into the picture and say, "Listen, we're going to add physical barriers in certain places. We're also going to add agents. We're going to add drones. We're going to add other types of technology that allow us to monitor more of the border more efficiently." Right, like, they have to articulate that, and they have to continue to hammer it home that it's not just build a giant wall and that resolves it, right? But that's what Donald Trump boils it down. You know, he says, "Oh, we're just going to build a wall. We're going to build a wall. It's got to be a wall."
He said it during the campaign. A big, beautiful wall, right? He said it during the campaign, and I think he's been called out on not having made any progress on it by the likes of Ann Coulter. I think it affects his ego, where he doesn't want to admit that he didn't deliver on something that physically.
But I don't care about him. I really don't. I don't care about him and his, you know, his claims and his bodaciousness. What I'm saying is that the Democrats are trying to die on this hill of we're not building a wall, when, yeah, you're going to build some wall, and you're going to have some drones, and you're going to have more border agents, and you're going to advance technology. You're going to have, you know, you're going to give the agents, you know, more tools to do their job better. You're also going to need, you know, we also need to figure out, you know, specifically what we want to do with immigration. You know, is the rule, are we going to let them in or are we not? And if we're going to let them in, then we need to have, you know, more processing centers. We need to have more social workers. We need to have, you know, more attorneys to figure out the asylum aspect. And if we're not, then we also need more processing to get them in and get them out. Right. But all those things are things that need to be kind of figured out. And it needs to be a much more nuanced conversation than build a wall, don't build a wall.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with any of that. You know, net immigration, I think, is basically zero right now. But there are a lot of people fleeing parts of Central America that typically don't get here by just crossing the border as a caravan, as much as that caravan has been politicized. But, you know, it's hard for me not to have empathy for people doing that. I mean, they are escaping from a war zone. And it's a war zone driven by the drug war. And that's a whole different road to talk about, but that's the root of the problem. I'm not sure. I'm comfortable saying then most of these people would be happy to stay in their home country and do their thing if they could live safely and feed their families and whatever. I mean, you know, most of these folks are just escaping hell, and I don't blame them at all. So,
right.
I know I'm saying the obvious, but...
Well, the problem is that the rules for asylum were written really before the cartels and the drug war are what they are.
Right.
And so under the old rules, then this, you know, what's going on in South America, it doesn't fit. But you don't have to be a you know, bleeding heart liberal humanitarian to say, hey, this is fucked up. You know, and there's no one, you know, I mean, Donald Trump got a lot of criticism for, you know, referencing countries as shitholes.
Right.
But, you know...
They're shitholes.
Right. Like, some of these places are shitholes. Like, would you... I mean, and they have... Listen, they have beautiful pieces, parts of them.
They do.
They have really amazing... But not everyone can fit in... You know, not everyone in a country can fit...
As a beachside villa, yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, you know, not everyone can work at and live on the resort. You know, the one resort that, you know, European people travel to in... You know, Bogota, Colombia, or whatever it might be. You know, I have a friend who actually married a girl from Colombia, and every year they do this like crazy trek back to her, like the city that she's from there. And he explained, like, they have to fly, I think they like fly to Brazil. From Brazil, I think they maybe fly to, I want to say Argentina. And
that doesn't make sense.
I can't remember. They fly to another country, and then, like, they have to, like, go
Peru would be the most logical.
Maybe it's Peru, I don't know.
Right.
But, I mean, we only talk about it when we see each other at weddings and we're drunk. So,
right, fair.
Sorry if I don't get the path right. But they fly into another country. I think they maybe take a small plane into Colombia, and then it's like a half day's trip via, you know, Jeep or something like that to wherever she's from. And he's like, it's beautiful when you get there, but, you know, like, there's a very, you know, small perimeter of where I can go. And if I go outside of it, he's like, I could get kidnapped or murdered or whatever.
Yeah,
and,
that's
and
scary.
He's like, they're not exaggerating. Like, they worry about him because he's as white as they come. I mean, he's white and, you know, he burns in the summer if he gets too much sun. He's got to wear, like, the big sun hat there. So he sticks out like a sore thumb.
Sure.
So there's legitimate concern when he goes down there, and he makes good money, you know. I mean, so, you know, like, she's got to remind him, like, hey, how about not that watch, and how about those shoes? You know, what I mean, like that.
Don't look like a good target.
Right, exactly. You know.
Okay.
Now, I could go down there. I mean.
Yeah. I probably could too.
Maybe.
Until I started talking, and then I'd be fucked.
Right. They can just shoot you on principle.
Fuck you. All right, so let's get to some fun Trump stuff, though, because Michael Cohen got sentenced this week. Sentenced to 3 years in prison.
Now, why is this fun? This is not fun. It brings me stress.
Why?
Listen, for the longest time, I've said that this whole Mueller investigation would do what it's done to a degree with Cohen and Flynn and Papadopoulos and a few other people. And you had a lot of people who were ignorant to the political process, who were, you know, greedy, looking to fill their own pockets, you know, Manafort with his ostrich leather jeans or whatever the fuck was happening there. And none of it would roll back to Trump or roll up to Trump. And this was much ado about a little. And it, you know, Mueller would come out and say, I got my indictments, I got these people, they pled guilty. You know, Trump is really annoying, but he didn't, you know, commit
breaking laws.
Right, breaking right. But this is starting to feel like that's not what's going to happen. To me, like, now I'm starting to turn, and I don't know what it is, and I don't know what the connection is. Obviously, we haven't seen the evidence, but my fear and concern is that Mueller's going to drop something, and it's going to be substantial enough to where he may actually try to indict the president. I don't know, but it's starting to feel that way with some of the buzz that was coming out of Washington today.
Right.
It felt like something was going on.
So they shut down an entire floor of a federal courthouse for matters related to the Russia investigation. I don't know what that really means. I don't know. I saw this on CNN, and they're making it sound like this is an unprecedented thing. And it may be. I don't know. But it seems like a big fucking deal to me.
Shutting down an entire floor, like that's... So
it can't be nothing.
Right.
And it doesn't mean it relates directly to Trump, but it's a big fucking deal.
Right. Now, it could be, you know, it could be Don Jr. It could be Jared Kushner, although I don't think it's Kushner. It could be any number of things. We don't know. It's all speculation. And I don't want to play that game. But with the way this is going, now you have to kind of, like, this one, with the amount of time that it's dragged out. And then you start to look at the number of people who have been indicted and have pled guilty. You've got a Russian operative who has admitted that her job was to come here and make connections with the NRA and make connections to the Republican Party and get them sympathetic to the Russian cause. Like that was her statement. So now all of a sudden, like, you know, maybe where there was smoke, there is a smoldering fire. I don't know.
I think we're going to learn a lot in the next several weeks. This time of year is a weird time of year for anything related to.
I feel like Mueller gives no shit. I think he gives no fucks about holidays, but
if buildings are closed, I mean,
right. I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think he has any issue dropping something on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
You know, I mean, but at the same time, maybe he'll wait until the day after Christmas. I don't think he's going to wait until the middle of January. Or maybe he will. I don't know. Either way.
Due process may dictate that he should do that. We don't know.
And I have to be honest. I don't want something to come down that all of a sudden makes Trump impeachable.
I actually kind of agree with you, but probably for different reasons. What's your reason? Just because you think he's... my concern is the instability that would be caused in the country if that happened would be scary. I mean...
Republicans control the Senate.
Correct. There's no chance he actually gets impeached.
There's no chance that he gets impeached.
Oh, you're impeached by the House and then a little bit... He won't be convicted in the Senate. That will not happen.
That's not going to happen, but... That entire process will cause, in my opinion, pandemonium. A lot of it is going to come from the left. It's going to come from the left because they're going to be on a fever pitch to take him down, right? They have been from the day that he was elected, right? Yeah. I mean, and then they're only going to get just more ridiculous about the whole thing. Right, and to the point where I have serious concerns about that.
My concern is I'm concerned about instability too. And by the way, for Democrats, I think it takes 67 votes in the Senate to convict a president following impeachment. I'm not saying they couldn't get 52 or 53. They need 67, and they ain't going to get 67. Nope. They probably won't get 52 or 53, to be honest with you. But they ain't going to get 67. And it's almost, I hate to say it, it's almost not worth trying.
It's not. It's not because what I think the cost of...
The instability.
And does it break out in a civil war? No. But do you get all of a sudden, do you get more protests? We see what's going on in Europe right now. Do you see a rise in growth in Antifa? Do you see more in, I mean, you can,
you know how I feel about Antifa. I'm not,
okay. I mean, you can give the, okay. The, yeah, little, but I mean, like, listen, you get 50 annoying, you know, pissed off 20 something, you know, white masked dudes,
idiots with bike chain,
right? Like, okay, I mean, yeah, like, okay, fine. Like one-on-one, like maybe you can take them out, but 10-on-1, your chances aren't good, no matter how big of a, you know, how big of pussies you think they are. And if you get that going on consistently throughout the country, because they start to see the vulnerability of the system, because I'm not completely convinced that they're just you know, they really care so much about the country, and they're
really... I don't think they give zero...
Right? Like, I mean, they're just kind
of... I think they're essentially anarchists and losers.
Right. I mean, okay, fine. Anarchists and losers, we can call them names, but that's still problematic. Right? It's still problematic, and they still disrupt... You know, they still disrupt a civil society, and that's not...
Yeah.
You don't want to put fuel on that fire, is what I'm saying. And I'm not saying if... If what Mueller has is credible and substantial and completely bulletproof,
right?
If we find out that, you know, Trump all along was a Manchurian candidate, and this is just, I'm just
throwing it out there. I know you're not actually saying that.
I'm not saying it. I'm not even saying it's a possibility.
I am now.
But all I'm saying is if the evidence that Mueller has was so damning, right? Like, there's evidence of a trip, of Trump taking a trip to Russia and coming back with marching orders directly from Putin, and you know, being funded by, and, you know, being, you know, like, there were recordings of that meeting that Trump had with the Russians shortly after he was elected, and Trump is just funneling them information about everything.
If he's
do.
Kevin Costner in No Way Out,
any of
anyone get that reference? I hope so.
Any of all those things. At that point in time, I say, okay, well, we have to take this guy out because he's a danger to our country. I don't think either of us believe that you're going to find any evidence nearly as damning.
I agree.
It's going to be
campaign finance.
It's going to be related to money, and it's going to. And I think it will. I definitely think it'll tie back to some of the stuff that's gone on with his properties throughout
in the last 20 years in New York.
Right. I mean, because there's some shady stuff there, without a doubt.
I agree.
And you can make an argument that, you know, that the Russians planted a lot of money into his properties that were failing and should have went under, and there may have been some sort of, you know, expectation on return of that investment, and then maybe it's a very attenuated connection. And if that's the case, is the stability of our country worth it? I will argue no.
Okay. You know, I probably shouldn't have called it the fun stuff until we get to the next subject, but do you think anyone got the No Way Out reference? Did you get it?
I got it, okay. Yes.
It's an older movie. Yes. I'll stop. So, all right, fun stuff. And again, this isn't really fun, but Stormy Daniels has been ordered to pay like $300,000 in Trump's legal fees. Now, this is fun for you because in the last show, you admitted that you've been DMing Miss Daniels and trying to... get her to come to Cleveland.
We'll help her out.
And now she might actually need the money. She might come back to Ohio where she's previously been arrested. But that whole thing is so fucked up to me. I mean, I'm sure legally it makes sense. But the fact that this lady has to pay over a quarter million dollars to Trump for reimbursement of legal fees when she initially accepted $130,000 as hush money. Was it Saturday Night Live? Someone did a joke where, like, he might be the best deal maker ever. He got paid $200,000 to fuck a porn star.
Okay, terrible jokes aside, the reality is, this is... So, when people assume that you can sue your way out of stuff,
right.
So she signed a contract.
Like, right, yeah.
She can be his, you know, like, well, I was just doing what I thought was best for the public. All right, well, you did. And everybody agrees with you that he fucked you and this whole thing is fucked up and he shouldn't have paid you to be quiet about it. That's a mistake on his part, but you still signed the contract.
Right.
And so because you signed it and because you violated it, then there's a penalty for violating that contract. Right, like, so with contract law, the way it works is the court looks at it and says, what's best for the state, what's best for contract law, what's best for precedent? So here, they looked at it and said, you know what, you're absolutely right. He did pay you at a very opportune time for himself to make sure that you didn't come out and say anything against him, right?
Right.
And the timing of that is very precarious, and, you know, the lawyer who paid you, who worked for him, they're going to pay a penalty. But,
okay,
Ms. Daniels, you signed a contract. So you violated that contract, and so you now will pay a penalty for dragging us through all this. Now, is it right in terms of justice and all that other happy horse shit? Probably not. But in the world of contracts, that's how it goes. And you maybe should have had that conversation with your lawyer before he decided he was going to run for president and then
get arrested.
Then get arrested for beating somebody up and then not run and then basically might lose his law license. I know he's already lost his law office and a number of other things.
I don't even know what Michael Avenatti's status is right now. I don't know if he's in jail.
He may be doing porn soon himself.
But it won't be filmed and it will be in prison. Sorry. All right, so let's get away from politics for a bit because something I have harped on before on some of my punchbacks. I've harped on it on our show, and it came up again. My boy Ben Shapiro, who I hold in very low esteem. I was in the kitchen cooking the other day, watching YouTube clips, and Ben Shapiro spoke out about the Kevin Hart stepping down from the Oscars thing, and it really bothered me because he essentially said what I completely agree with. You know, that Kevin Hart's thing was, you know, over almost 10 years old, and he had already apologized for it, and it was all just Hollywood patting itself on the back for being so progressive, and it was horrible for me listening to Ben Shapiro make sense for a change.
See, that's something that you really have to get over.
What's that?
Right? Like, just because, like, you disagree with him, like, politically, he says something that you agree with, and then it, like, it flusters you. Like, it's just like, all right,
well. It doesn't really.
Yes, it does. Like, okay. I can see it in your face, and I can hear it in your voice, but that is aside from the point.
Okay. So he also attacked the...
Hold on. Before we jump to the next thing. With Kevin Hart. I don't think we've talked about it much.
We talked about last show a little bit.
You know, that whole thing sucks.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think it's ridiculous. Now, did they ask him to step down or did he just voluntarily step
down? No, they told him he had to apologize and make a statement. And he basically said, I've already done that. I did it years ago. The joke was made years ago. I'm a different person then than I am now. And to his discredit, he ended up sort of doing an apology while saying he wasn't going to apologize. So he actually did what he probably had to do to not have to step down. I really wish he would have said, look, I've already said I'm sorry and done some token thing and then done the Oscars. But
yeah, I mean, I guess.
But so, he stood on principle. He did. Well,
he kind of, sort of. I think, one, I think you own it. And I think you say, I said it. And
it was
just because, I think that, listen, it may not be politically correct, but you say, I own it. That's how I feel. I do apologize if it offended you, but it's not, I'm not, like, listen, I don't have a problem with gay people, but I mean, listen, I don't want my son to be gay, right? You person probably don't want your daughter marrying a black guy, right? Like, so, I mean, we're both assholes. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm sorry if you were offended. I've already dealt with this, you know, 10 years ago. You know, I said it, and then you go on and you do your thing.
Right.
Right? Like, I mean, you do the show, and then if... Then basically, you make them fire you, right? Like, you make them say, you know, like you... And I think that's... Listen, first of all... Kevin Hart has made $1 billion this year. Right. I don't know if that's
right. No, but he's made a lot
of money. But he's made a shit ton of money over the last, like, 5 years. So
I think he was the most, like...
Between him and The Rock, and I'm pretty sure The Rock made more, just because, like, I can't shake The Rock, not that I would want to. But, I mean, they made a shit ton of money.
At one point, Kevin Hart was, like, the... I forget what the statistic was, but he was, like, the highest-selling comic in the world. Like... In terms of filling seats, he was doing stadiums, doing more bigger audiences than any other comic.
Right.
Now, I'm not a huge fan of him as a stand-up comedian. I love him as a comic actor. Don't love his stand-up. Just not my style. But yeah, wildly successful. And as a person, he seems like a really cool guy, actually. I don't know if you know this. One thing he does when he travels is he travels with his entourage. And, you know, they spend, whatever, 4 or 5 days in a city. And they stay in a hotel room with, you know, a suite, whatever. And they buy a gaming system every city they go to. And they play video games and do whatever. And then when they leave the gaming system as a gift for the staff that cleaned up after them.
Yeah.
So they leave a $400 or $500 gift just as a thank you. And again, Kevin Hart can't afford it, but that's a really cool thing to do. There's lots of rich celebrities who are douchebags. He's actually doing something, and I can't imagine what a hotel room looks like after 4 days of that crew partying.
Who knows? Well, but, I mean,
I know what I've done in hotel rooms, and I'm a savage, man.
Well, I mean,
booze bottles and other stuff.
Kevin Hart is he's really big in fitness. And I'm saying that because he's got a guy that, you know, meets him in various cities and they work out and he puts on, just run challenge in, different cities that he travels to. So he gets a bunch of people and they go on a 3 mile run or whatever they do, or they do like a 5K or a 3K or something along those lines. So he's a little bit more conscious, but I guess my whole thing with it is, with Brett Kavanaugh, I said, listen, it happened, 30 years ago.
1983, right.
And, you clearly stated that you're a big fan of beer and you drank a lot, all that other shit. I said, just fucking own it and move past, and own it to the degree of, listen, it was 30 years ago. I don't remember. It doesn't stand out to me because it wasn't a traumatic event to me. It was another night where I drank. I may have drank too much. And if I did and something happened, I'm sorry. But I can't say that anything happened. I can't give you any specifics. And, that's the best that I can do for you. You know, he chose to, be the defiant one and everything else. Right. And, I mean, it all worked out for him. You can't tell me that if he would have done it my way that it still wouldn't end up the same way. And I think it probably would have played a little bit better in the media. He still would have got attacked and you're never going to make the feminazis happy and the Me Too movement and everything else. But he wasn't going to lose it either way. So I guess for him, it was the win because, you defiantly deny it all, no matter what, and you come out. But it's just like you could have saved yourself so much, right? Like you could have saved yourself so much just by... kind of moving down to the direction of having somewhat humility. And I'm not completely convinced that he wasn't just fucking blacked out of his mind, fell on top of her, tried to hump her, and then got up and then just like him and his drunk buddy walked out of the room. Right now, we could talk about like the severity of what that is, but I mean, I'm not completely convinced that didn't happen.
Right.
So, who knows? Maybe it did or maybe it didn't, but I don't think that he actually has enough data himself to say one way or the other. And in this particular case, we know what Kevin Hart did. It's right there. It's memorialized on Twitter.
Yep.
So you do the same thing. You're like, listen, I know I did this. I also know that I apologize for it. So if it still bothers you, well, sorry to offend you, but this is how that's how I felt then. I this is my stance on it, and I'm sorry. And you force the Academy to fire you, and if they fire you, you say, all right, well, fuck off. I don't need the money anyway.
Okay, I understand that philosophy. Again, I think I wish he wouldn't have stepped down. I don't think there would have been any real backlash. And if there was,
the only backlash would have been they would have either fired him and replaced him, or they wouldn't invite him back. Which you can make an argument that you should only really do it once or twice anyway. So he gets it out of the way and whatever.
I think he would have been really good at it, though. I think that sort of event caters to his style of comedy. But anyway, so I'm watching Ben Shapiro talk about this, and I'm agreeing with Ben Shapiro and hating it. And then Ben Shapiro starts lamenting that Black Panther is nominated for Best Picture. And I've harped on this many times. Ben Shapiro went on like multiple rants about how Black Panther was a terrible movie. No, he didn't say it was a terrible movie. He said he liked the movie, but it depicted America as a shithole and all this other stuff. And it became very clear to me after listening to his rants, which I watched before I actually saw the movie, and then watching the movie, it became perfectly clear to me that Ben Shapiro has never watched Black Panther. He acts like he does. He talks about how he liked it and it was a good movie. And then in this video about Kevin Hart, he talks about how it shouldn't have been nominated for Best Picture, which you can argue either way, whatever. Things that shouldn't get nominated do and don't all the time. But his obsession with that movie is hilarious to me because he will not back off on the fact that he wants to sound woke or whatever and say, I watched it and I liked it, but, and then throws all his butts in there. And I said, my punchback, I pointed out that Ben Shapiro, my punchback actually at Bill Maher, I made a joke about Ben Shapiro not having watched the movie. I'm convinced that guy did not see this. And yet, for some reason, the existence of this movie and its success and its now acclaim bothers
him. It's not the existence of the movie that bothers him. It's just the fact, it's the amount of
blackness,
energy that the movie created amongst the black community. I mean, it was really a sort of a galvanizing film for a lot of black people at one point in time. Now, what's funny is, you know, for me, it was you know, listening to Karen Hunter and all the people on her show talk about who are we letting into Wakanda, you know, like,
right.
You know, like Denzel gets into Wakanda, but,
Ben Carson doesn't.
Yeah, Ben Carson doesn't. You know, I mean, like, he, you know, so-and-so gets in, but this part, like, and where it was annoying for me is just, like, you people knew nothing about this movie or knew nothing about this comic or anything about this, you know, until...
6 months ago.
6 months ago, right? And now, all of a sudden, like, you guys get to decide who enters Wakanda. Well, Karen Hunter, you don't get to come to Wakanda just because I say so, because I was here first. So you can stand on the outside of the bubble and bang on the invisible, you know, force field that protects us from assholes like yourself. You know, I mean, like, that's kind of, like, my feeling as a comic book nerd. I mean,
you're more passionate about it because you right. were into I mean, this like, a long it, time it was, ago.
And for me,
and when it got made, you were very excited.
Right, and I was because it's a fun story. And listen, Stan Lee has passed. Rest in peace.
Correct.
But Stan Lee specifically wrote Black Panther. Him and Jack Kirby, they wrote this because, you know, at the time, you know, Black Panther, I think, originally made its original debut in 1963, right? Like,
wow.
At the height of the Civil Rights Movement, and that's not by accident. It wasn't by coincidence. They wrote it because, you know, T'Challa and his father, they were supposed to represent, in one character, you know, the two leader, kind of what we saw as the leaders of the Civil Rights Movement at the time between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, right? You know, one wanted to use, you know, like, you know,
force, and the other wanted peace, right?
You know, one wanted to use the fury of the sword, and the other wanted to, you know, kind of use diplomacy. And you see that conflict within T'Challa throughout the movie, right? Like, now,
right.
There's a whole lot more to it between him and his father and everything else, but that was not an accident, right? Like, it was, you looked at the time when the story was originally written and when it came out and why it was so impactful, right? I didn't discover it until 1988,
right?
You know, and so I didn't even understand what I was reading, but I just thought it was a cool story, and it wasn't even related to race, right? I mean, there was a little bit of, oh, hey, look, a black character, but there were other black characters like Luke Cage,
sure.
And, you know, a few others, but it wasn't so much about race. It was just a cool character, right? Like, I mean, he just drinks this root, and so there's a chance that I may be able to find a root that turns me into a superhero, and then I can kick ass, and, you know, I mean, I just need to find some vibranium, and then everything goes well. But there's multiple layers to pretty much all the Marvel comics, and even the DC comics. There are multiple layers to it that people, now that we've seen them brought to the big screen,
right?
Now everyone else is kind of seeing what I saw as a kid reading through and reading the different panels, right? Now everyone's kind of seeing the genius of Tony Stark, and everyone's kind of seeing the complexity of the Incredible Hulk and all these other characters, and everyone's starting to embrace it. And people, comic book people like me, are just like, see, we told you we weren't assholes. But for Ben Shapiro, he's looking at it and he's like, oh, well, it's got a lot of black people in it, and now all the black people are happy, and they think that this is how it's supposed to be, right? And he's being hypercritical of it just to be the contrarian, right? Like, well, just because all of these people like it, I'm gonna tell you why I don't like it, and I'm gonna stand by my principles, right? Well, not that he doesn't like it, but it shouldn't get the critical acclaim. Like, we should, like, race shouldn't matter. There's no such thing as race. Right, like, it shouldn't matter. We should just look at it on its merits, and just looking at it on its merits, on a scale of 1 to 10, this movie's a 6, right? Like, that's Ben Shapiro, right? Yeah. There's, because he's not alone. That's not an original thought, right? There's a lot of white guys just like him, right, with the same thought that, I mean, it was okay, but I mean, there's better stories from Black Panther that they could have actually talked about, and You know, I mean, just because there's a lot of black people in it doesn't mean, like, it should be, like, all
right,
fuck
right,
off.
Right, okay.
Like, and right. Here's the other part. It's a fucking comic book.
And it's, exactly.
Right, it's a comic book. Right, and like, now, my own, this is where I'll agree with Ben Shapiro. It wasn't the best picture. It was a really good movie.
It was fun. Right? It was a lot of fun.
But, I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. But it wasn't, it's not going to win Best Picture.
Honestly, this is the only movie that's been nominated for Best Picture that I've seen.
Now, what's happened, though, the Academy is also at a point where you can't continue to... These comic book movies are making so much fucking money that, you know, and they're not just bang, bang, shoot 'em up. Like, they actually have, you know, storylines, mm-hmm. and they have... Good acting, right? Like Robert Downey Jr. Does an amazing job as Tony Stark.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's
what's her name? Gwyneth Paltrow is sidekick, right?
Yeah, but you have a lot of people who are doing good acting in these movies.
Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk was actually pretty cool.
Right, Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk. I mean, especially in Thor Ragnarok, like that was actually one of the best Marvel movies. But you have a lot of people who are doing good work in film. So at some point, you have to start to recognize these movies beyond, oh, well, the special effects are really good.
Right.
So I think the Academy said, all right, Black Panther, with the amount of money that the movie made, and with...
The amount of time it stayed relevant.
Right.
I mean, it was like months that it was the talk of...
Yeah, I mean, like, so they looked at that, and they said, all right, we'll throw it up there for Best Picture. And my argument is, it was very good, and it made a shit ton of money, but I don't think... But I also don't know the other movies that it's up against for Best Picture. And frankly, if it's your normal, World War II romantic love story where either the guy or the girl dies, or, you know, something...
Some period piece with...
Civil
War.
Right, like, you know, something, terrible about slavery, or, you know, something, I mean, like...
Two lesbians fighting a bear while Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, I mean, if it's that, then I mean, like, well, fuck, just give me Black Panther. No, you're not, but I mean, that's what, you know, I mean, it's just like this crazy...
On the record, Steve just said, I'm not an asshole. It's
probably I did.
Not, that's not good, that.
First of all, I defend you a lot, so just
thank you.
The fuck up.
All right.
But I,
you see the irony in what you just did, right?
Okay. But I don't think it was Best Picture. But at the same time, I have to look at what else.
That's cool that it got nominated to me.
What else was nominated? Because I'll make the argument that if you're going to nominate a movie for Best Picture, then Dark Knight, Batman the Dark Knight, should have been nominated for Best Picture and should have won. Sorry.
That was actually a really cool movie.
It was the best movie. That was the best movie of the year. That was one of the first movies in a long time. I went back and I paid money to see that movie again.
Okay. And, I mean, Heath Ledger is so good in that movie.
Unbelievable.
And,
I can't remember if he won an Academy Award for that movie.
I don't think he did.
And
he was nominated. But, oh, God. That I'm not nearly as big a comic book guy as you.
You didn't have to be.
No, you didn't.
You didn't have to be for that movie to suck you in.
I will make this pencil disappear. Right. Ta-da! I love that scene.
And then he does the Michael Jai White, who's one of my favorite, like...
Right.
You know, like, action movie heroes. Like he's a,
all right.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, all right. There's actually two more serious things to talk about. One of them is a ruling was upheld in appellate court today regarding Texas denying people the right to buy firearms if they are using medical marijuana. And I have a huge problem with this for a bunch of reasons.
Tell me why.
One of them is HIPAA is supposed to protect you, right? So you're not supposed to have your personal health influence the rest of your life because it impacts what people will do in terms of taking care of themselves if they think, if I do this, then my rights and other things will be impacted. So this is a weird one to me because this ruling was in Texas, but apparently it's in like 10 other states also where they're saying if you qualify for medical marijuana, which I'm guessing in Texas is fairly hard, that you can no longer buy a firearm. And
it's probably not, though.
What's that?
To qualify for medical marijuana.
Okay, maybe not. I mean,
I don't know.
I don't either. It's just Texas, and who knows? I mean, granted, we live in Ohio, which is kind of the Texas of the North. So it bothers me for a bunch of reasons. The biggest one is if you are saying that marijuana, I'm supposed to say cannabis,
go ahead.
Yeah, all right. All right. if you're being, if you're using that product and they're saying you can't have a gun because that product and a gun makes you unsafe, why aren't you doing the same thing for antidepressants? Why aren't you doing the same thing for opioids? Why aren't you doing the same thing for alcohol? Because, I mean, I know what alcohol does to me, and it's fun. I like it a lot. And I'm looking at this Weller a lot more than as the night goes on, by the way. But it is insane to me that Texas would put this law into place, and if it continues to roll into the other states where it's on the docket, it could really impact a lot of people. And I can't believe that the NRA isn't going nuts about this. I can't believe that, you know, legalized cannabis people aren't going nuts about this. And again, it to me is a really scary jump when you say we're going to make a medical evaluation of you as a from a legal perspective and saying if you need to relax and feel better, you can't have a gun. That bothers me.
Yeah, I don't have a argument against your feelings on it. I think this is the state of Texas saying
fuck you to to cannabis.
Sorry. Right,
I mean, keep trying to train
cannabis,
myself.
Cannabis, marijuana, like,
right.
But this is them saying fuck off cannabis. Because what we do know in Texas is that you like your guns.
Yes, they do.
We know you like your guns. And you can walk into a store and buy a bottle of bourbon. If you spend $100, we'll give you a free gun. But if you walk into a store and you get yourself some cannabis to make yourself not depressed, you can't have guns no more. Now, you can make an argument that, hey, make people choose between the two. Hopefully they choose their health. You know, being mentally healthy is more important than having a gun. And maybe it reduces violence. Okay. Fine. I mean, that could in a far off make believe land be the justification, but we know it's not. Like they're intentionally pitting the two against each other and making people make a choice.
Right.
And I don't think they're making people make a choice for the right reasons. They're making people make a choice because they know that people like their guns, but there's obviously a market for people in Texas. For medical marijuana or medical cannabis or however we want to say it. And so they're saying, they're drawing the line in the sand and they're saying you make your choice.
Yeah. Well, or is it even more insidious than that, though? Is it more of a, if you've done this, then we are going to punish you for it? Because that's how it feels to me.
Yes. I think, yes, that. But I think it's also... because you're only going to get so many people with that. So I think it really goes to, we'll punish these certain people now, but the real impact is we're going to draw the line in the sand and we're betting on guns over cannabis.
Over pot, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that...
and what'll be interesting...
In Texas, that's...
That's a big thing there. Listen, I mean, you can... whether you're for or against guns, like Texas is a state where they are very for guns.
Yes. Yes, they are.
And so... you know, I mean, the Second Amendment debate, like, that's not, you don't want to be on the wrong side of that debate down in Texas. You know, I mean, because you just don't. And, I mean, you can go down there and you can be as confident in your argument as you want to be. You can say your argument. You may be dead right, but you are not going to change a single mind down there. Not one. You know, I mean, you're...
unless you're in Austin.
Right. Well, maybe in Austin. But other than that... You're not gonna move anybody off their stance on it. So, you know, it is an interesting situation. You know, and you can make an argument that maybe this is Texas, maybe this doesn't have anything to do with marijuana. Maybe this has to do with the influx of people from California that are moving into Texas. You know, because the cost of living in California is so high,
right?
And you're finding a number of corporations that are moving to Texas,
yeah,
because it's cheaper. Texas does not have an income tax. A state income tax.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, like, if you're living in California, it's a hell of a lot cheaper to move to Texas and live, whether you're a corporation or a person or an individual. And so Texas is seeing an influx of people from California with a much more liberal stance coming into their state. So maybe this is more of a defense mechanism.
A disincentive against, to coming into...
right, like, don't come here, right? Like, I mean, it may be cheaper for you, but, you know, you can't have a gun and... if you like weed, We right. know that you probably like weed. We don't know your stance on guns. But if you like both, then you can't have guns. So maybe that'll keep you from coming here.
I haven't thought about it that way. That's interesting. And, I mean, you would think that, for the most part, like, the state would want the influx of money from California. But often that's not the case because they jack up housing prices so much because if you sell your house in California, you can now buy a mansion in Oregon, Washington, Colorado, which has happened. I mean, I used to date a girl from Colorado, and housing in, she was just outside of Denver, and housing had gone through the roof because so many people moved from California to Colorado, and they could spend 20% more on a house without batting an eye. And if you're a homeowner and your price is going up, great. If you want to be a first-time home buyer, if you're in the market, get fucked.
You do. You get crushed. Yeah, that's kind of the benefit of being in Ohio is that, you know, like we're, you know, very close to a lot of different key places, Chicago, right. New York, Boston, you know, not that, you know, not, you know, a very short flight to, you know, Florida, anywhere, Atlanta, yeah. places like that. But there's not a lot of people who
so
want
to cheap to live here.
Right. Not a lot of people want to come here. You know, we've seen a little bit of a housing boom here locally, but it's nothing compared to what's happening in North Carolina. Compared to... I mean, it's nothing even compared to what's happening in Columbus. Like, Columbus, they're saying, listen, you better build, you know, 10,000 more units, more housing units over the next however many years to keep up with the pace of, you know, job growth and everything like that. So, you know, in Northeast Ohio specifically, where we live, there's a little bit of an advantage to it in terms of the cost, which played into a decision that I made. Right. Earlier this week, which we won't get into the specifics, but you know, I had a potential job opportunity that I ended up turning down because I would have had to move to the East Coast, and the money on paper looks like significantly more, but
in terms of cost of living,
but once you right. do the adjustments for cost of living and everything else, you realize like it's not that much, and you know, like I'm gonna lose a lot.
The quality of life thing. I mean. That's why I love Cleveland so much.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, when you go to some place on the East Coast and get a shot and a beer and it's $18, mm-hmm. then you come here and it's $6.
We can walk up the street and we could probably do it. I mean, we can do a shot and a beer literally for $5.
We will. We'll figure out the post-show shenanigans after this. You wanted to talk about
Actually, I don't.
You don't? Okay.
No. We'll wrap it up. We'll wrap it up.
All right. Well. Thank you for listening. We drank Weller's bourbon, which is kind of growing on me as the evening has gone on.
It's a good bourbon. It's good. I gave it a 90 right. for good reason. I would love to give it higher. And if we get the green label and the 12 on here, then we'll see what I score them in relation. And I still have to get the Angel's Envy Rye.
Damn it.
On the show. It's okay.
Sorry. Forgot about that.
I do need to get that on the show because you do need to taste it, and we'll have to.
Compare the
you know before the rye. Before the show we'll do the comparison and then we'll rate the rye on the show and then we can talk about that but
sounds good man
all future so we got you know future
more whiskey to come
whiskey
more politics
goals.
To come
whiskey
we'll see
goals.
What happens in the Mueller investigation by the time we get back to you and we're all done thank you very much and we are out.